Welcome to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Show, live from Ferd Sports Bar and Grill, providing a positive perspective from the peewees to the preps to the pros in Champa Bay. Now, here's your host, Mike Rickard.
And I've been doing this ever since, but in between, I was assisting the seminars, and like last night, I ended up calling Action Blow by Blow. We had a professional event last night at the...
You were on the call?
Yes, I was on the call. Yes, sir.
We'll be seeing the ESPN one of these days, my man.
I'm like I'm all purpose. Whatever you need me, if I can help you. But I was able to sit and do blow by blow with former world champion Luis Collazo and former undisputed lightweight champion Nate Campbell and a performing fighter, Jose Ocasio. And it was a great event, great turnout. We had some great knockouts. And... This is a wonderful weekend for the Florida Boxing Hall of Fame, because this is our crescendo. This is our Super Bowl.
And this is right up here in Clearwater at the Hilton, right?
Yeah, at the Marriott.
Marriott.
Yes, on Roosevelt Boulevard.
Don't ever mix those two up.
Yes.
Marriott.
Yes, 12600 Roosevelt Boulevard. And tonight...
My address down. My
yes,
man.
Yes. And right now we're having like open discussions with the champions. And we have a lot of inductees that are there, past and present. Currently this year, we have Al Cole, former cruiserweight champion of the world. Matter of fact, Al Cole was an actor in the Ali movie with Will Smith. He played Ernie Terrell.
He did?
Yes. So when Will Smith slapped him...
I'm loving this.
I guess Will Smith has
to have
practice.
It's like you listening to a guy, baseball guy. For me, look at, I got my own Muhammad Ali app.
There you go.
I get it every day. I get a quote. I get a fight. I get Muhammad Ali every day. Inspiration.
Yes. Matter of fact, it broke my heart when he passed away. I ended up going to his funeral. I drove.
You drove to Louisville?
Yes. Me and my partner, Mr. Herbert Hannibal, we're both sick, but we drove 12 hours. And we stayed at the residence Marriott. We got there about midnight.
Right down there.
Yes. And guess who was in the lobby? His kids.
I bet. That was a thrill.
And I tried my best, you know, to get tickets, because at that time they were giving out tickets away. Because
I'm still in love with his daughter.
Oh, dude.
Besides gorgeous, she's a hell of a boxer.
I mean, she, Layla Ali make a good man backslide, you know.
Oh, my God. She's the real deal.
Oh, yes. It's just seeing her up close and in person. But the thing was, you know, when Ali passed away, and my father loved Ali, and I love my father. My father passed away at 59. So when Ali passed away, it felt like my father dying all over again. So it was very, very emotional for me. And I said, I must go. And I asked the guy at the Marriott, man, can I get tickets? I said, dude, I'll pay you $100 if you can get me two tickets to get into the place. So the funeral about to start. You had everybody there. You had Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. You had Jim Brown. You had Bill Clinton. You had Larry Holmes, Sugar Ray Leonard, Mike Tyson. Everybody was there. And I'm about to give up. My partner says, Chris, I just want to get you a ticket. And then I happened, this one young kid came up and said, listen, I got three tickets. I ended up getting those two tickets. We ended up going to the funeral and stuff. And even though we was in the nosebleeds, I had to go and pay my respects.
You were there?
Yes, I was there.
I would have mortgaged my house to go to that. Oh, my God. But, and the titans of other sports.
Yes.
The titans in politics. Because he was global.
Yes.
I don't care what anybody says. And I loved... the Foreman fight.
Oh, classic.
And I'm glad that he did it internationally, because it showed the world the impact that he had on people.
Yes. Matter of fact...
He could bring country... They brought him in as an ambassador.
Yes.
Many, many times for global conflicts.
Yes.
They say, Muhammad, they don't want to see anybody else from America come over because of several issues. Who knows what they were. But the bottom line is, they would call Muhammad Ali and say, would you mind going over and being an ambassador? That's a testament to the kind of man that he was.
Because he was a people's champ. See, he did not care about what side of the fence you're on. Okay, if he can bring people together, you know, that's where it was.
He had wisdom.
Yes.
He was a wise man.
You know, he didn't have a degree in political science. You didn't need all that. It's basically what's morally right, what's morally wrong.
Common sense.
There you go.
He had common sense.
There you go.
And it was just, you know, as I get out these daily updates, and you know, they do go back into the history of how he was disrespected, and
yes.
It's sad, but it's the past. But he didn't let it keep him down. It motivated him.
Yes.
And talk about the Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali relationship that a lot of people don't realize.
In behind the scenes, before things got awry, they were good friends. Okay, they were when Ali was in exile, Joe Frazier helped him out financially. Okay, and a lot of people did not know that. So there was a point in time when Ali was, his case went to the Supreme Court. And at the time, Richard Nixon, I believe, was the president at the time. And he asked Joe Frazier, can you beat him? Because Joe actually advocated to for Muhammad Ali behind the scenes to give him his license. Because this was going to be the, be a mega fight. So Joe ended up picking Ali up to go for a ride to discuss about possible first fight. And the promoter, Butch Lewis, was in the vehicle, too. And discussing
putting the deal together,
trying to put the deal together. You know, Butch Lewis is he's famous and infamous, however you want to call it. And they was able to get it together. So after they drove to their destination, Ali hopped out the car and started ridiculing Joe. And that part, I don't think Joe understood, because Ali was like a big brother that would try to needle the little brother. And Joe Frazier, and he was one of my favorite fighters. He wasn't as sharp, as quick with it, you know, as far as...
No one was. So not even Howard Cosell.
So it was not a fair fight, if you will. And there were some bars that Ali did shot at Joe that was probably below the belt. And what happened, and I spoke to the elders at the time who was living, especially during the civil rights era and all that type of stuff. And it was sort of sad because... The way it was like Ali was the quote unquote, have it said, I mean, Ali was the champion for the blacks and Joe Frazier was champion for the whites, which that was not true.
Not in my house.
it wasn't true, but that's the way the social economic at the time.
The politicians got involved, which was BS on both sides.
Yes.
Black and white.
Yes.
It was sad.
And it shouldn't have been that way. And for the first time in history, you had two undefeated champions at the height of their prime. You know, Ali might have been slightly bit slower because he had a 3.5-year layoff. But to be able to be at that magnitude, I mean, that was Joe Frazier's finest moment. I think Ali played a little bit too much in that fight, but Joe was taunting him. They were both talking. And heck, even on Frank Sinatra, was able to get the media credentials to take pictures for Time Life magazine.
You told me that factoid last time. That's talk about good facts. Nobody knew that.
So it was just excellent because I have the actual event on a DVD. I got a bunch of crates. And watch when Joe Frazier was being interviewed by Archie Moore, and Joe didn't have time for the interviewing. He's about ready to go out there, and Joe spoke real. At that time, they wouldn't show that, what the language that he used. They wouldn't show it on TV back in those days, but I have the footage.
You have the raw footage?
I have the raw footage.
Wow.
And Joe was like, no, if you want to interview, this interview. And I get to blink out of my locker room because they're about to go out. So watching
he would not like today's media world. They got a microphone right in front of your face right before the first punch.
Yes, and Joe was determined that day. I don't think no heavyweight in history would have beat Joe that night. And Joe gave it all he could in that night.
Even 15 though, rounds, by the way, folks, not 12.
15 rounds. And Matt, I want to say in round 10, he hurt Ali.
That's when Muhammad went down?
That was round 15.
He went down in 15.
Round 15. Joe,
I was listening on a transistor radio. I can't remember where I was at.
Joe hit him with the left hook. Ali slumped and tried to bounce off the other side of the corner of the ropes, and Joe caught him again. Ali's hurt. Ali's on Quitter Street, and he's trying to survive that round. But you know how Ali was. He would try to fake out that I'm not really hurt, so he over-exaggerated. And Joe kept on going, and then in the 15th round, we all saw what happened. Ali trying to throw an outside uppercut, which is a no-no. And Joe came up top with the beautiful left hook. And Ali went down. But what was amazing, that Ali got up by the count of four on a left hook like that. So by the time Joe Frazier got to his neutral corner, Ali was already standing up. And, of course, Ali finished the round. And of course, Joe won the fight. Now, Ali believes that he won the fight, but I saw the fight. And
what are your things? You're a judge and mm-hmm. a referee.
Oh, Joe won.
Joe won?
Oh, Joe won that fight. It was like this. It was the atmosphere. Even though I wasn't born at that time, but watching how the crowd reaction And actually, it was just beautiful. I wish I could have been present there, but
it sounds like you were with your description. He's Christopher Young, and of course, when it comes to the world of boxing in the state of Florida, especially on the West Coast, he's the man with the plan. I'm looking right now. Of course, as you said, you even gave him the address. Is tonight open to the public, or was it last night?
Tonight they're having a dinner.
And is this when you're going to get your award? Go ahead.
Well, I got the phone call, which I was surprised. I want to say maybe in December, I got a call from the president of the Florida Boxing Hall of Fame, Steve Kenton. And he called me about this award. And at first, I thought he was playing. So I put him on speakerphone so my family can hear. He says, no, this is serious. I'm like, I don't think I deserve it. I'm being honest. It took my family and my friends basically tell me, like, Chris, all the things you've done over your lifetime,
you deserve it
and everything. But when it comes to compliments, I don't take them very well, because I'm the type of person, even at the job, I grind, put my head down, just finish this mission, move on to the next. That's just how I've always been wired.
You're brought up by a military man.
See, and things, I kept going. But after I sat back and all the things that I have done, and I'm not being braggadocious by no means by that, because there's a lot of shoulders that I was able to step on, so to speak, that helped catapult me into the position I'm in today. And tonight, I almost definitely will thank them. I'm going to give them their flowers while they're here, because they'll actually allow me to able to do what I love in the sport of boxing. And once again, I try to do a little bit of this, a little bit of that, trying to see a different perspective, being a media guy, being a blue by blue, working the corners, being an official. So I may not be a master of one, but I'm very well rounded that you put me in a position I think I will thrive in.
One of these days, because you're a young man, you could potentially be the president of the Florida. I'm serious about that. Given the resume, and I like this book that you authored, and it's just simple. I got a question.
Yes, sir.
Is Jason Young your son?
Yes, sir.
He's the next.
Yes, he would. Yeah,
your dad, Jason Young?
Yes,
and I gave him that out, because that's your middle name, and then you got Jason. I love that. Rich in tradition, your family history. So tonight, when they're recognizing you and the boxers, give me an idea of the depth and the number of guys that are going to be on that stage.
Well, for tonight,
and a lot of them are they national names? A lot of
Yes, they're big names. Tomorrow morning, we will actually induct the champions. We're going to have fighters like Fresno Kendo, David Tua. I don't know if you've heard of David Tua.
Of course I've heard of David.
Shannon Briggs. He will be there. He's going to be inducted.
Is Briggs from Florida?
He got a house in South Florida. Yes, sir. You got people like Corey Spinks, the son of Leon Spinks.
It's Leon's sons. I asked you this.
Leon's son. So yes, it is.
I met Leon and Michael, but yes. Corey's the son.
Corey's the son, and Corey did very fine in his own career, in his own right, from an undisputed welterweight champion, two-time light middleweight champion.
Was he Olympian too, Corey?
That part I don't quite remember, but I just know he currently gives back to USA Boxing. He always he stays on the East Coast of Florida. You got people like Randall Bailey, devastating knockout puncher, Keith Mullins. He's going in posthumously. But we also have other trainers and stuff that's being inducted. But the fans will be able to, listen, if you come in the morning, you can have breakfast with the champions. Okay, that's open to the public. You'll be able to sit there and
Marriott, by the way.
Yes, at the Marriott.
12600 Roosevelt Boulevard North, as you got it right here in front of me now. And so they can sit down.
They can sit down and take pictures, autographs. I encourage everybody to go to the Florida Boxing Hall of Fame, because it's not just this year. You have people from previous. See, people like, you know who made sure, like Michael Moore. Michael Moore was inducted.
Michael Moore from Florida?
Yes, Michael Moore, he stays in Florida.
I'm learning more every day.
Yes, Riddick Bowe, he's from Florida.
Riddick Bowe's from Florida.
He has a house in Florida. You understand, we're the retirement state.
Well, I know. Why you think you're looking across my desk at this old man?
I mean, we have like Don King. Don King was one of the original. Pinklin Thomas, he'll probably show up, former heavyweight champion of the world. Tony TNT Tucker, he's from Clearwater.
Tony TNT Tucker?
He's from Clearwater, yes. He had a boxing gym off of, what's that street? It's called Hurricane Boxing Gym off of Clearwater. What's that street called? We did a couple of shows there when I was amateurs. It might be. It's close to a high school. Very close to high school.
Clearwater Heights, right off of Drew, right up there.
Yes. Yeah. Who else been inducted? I don't want to leave anybody out. I mean, before he passed away, we had Aaron Pryor. Aaron Pryor was inducted, and got a chance to sit down and meet with him and talk turkey with him. Harold Letterman, before he passed away, he was inducted. So I got a chance to talk with these individuals and be able to glean knowledge from them.
Roy Jones and those guys?
Roy's not in there yet. Roy Tarver.
Tarver's in now, isn't he?
He got inducted last year.
Last year, I saw his picture, yeah.
Yes.
And he's in the Florida Sports Hall of Fame. My buddy Barry Smith, who I had on earlier, inducted him. And into the Florida Sports Hall of Fame in Southam. And he was one of the first boxers that the Florida Sports Hall of Fame recognized, because they do all sports.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, talk about
so we have
who's who. I didn't realize that many were from Florida.
Yes.
And then, of course, Muhammad Ali's.
And he had a house in Florida. And he trained down in Miami. Miami Street, down in Miami. And one of the biggest fights in heavyweight history happened where?
Sonny Liston.
Yes, right. The great Sonny Liston. See, Sonny Liston, very, very underrated. I don't think people would actually truly understood Sonny Liston and how misunderstood he was. He couldn't be that bad of a person, even though he may dabbled with the mob. But him and Joe Louis was like this.
Well, people, a lot of people did. Angelo Dundee is Miami guy.
Yes. Yeah. And I got a chance to meet him before he passed away. Matter of fact, Angelo Dundee's buried.
I don't think you want to meet him because you pass away right after.
No. Because I went to his funeral. I went to Angelo Dundee's funeral. And Muhammad Ali showed up, and he was actually walking on his own. I had to call in from work, because I'm like, listen, I knew the greatest would be there. I said, he had to come, and I got close to him. I tried
to get pictures. We need to get you a museum and definitely a podcast.
Man, if you see what's in my house, oh my gosh. I got autographs from Joe Louis to Jake LaMotta to Larry. Matter of fact, I got a chance to sit down and chop it up with Larry Holmes last week for about 2.5-3 hours.
I love him, and you know, people disrespect Larry Holmes and his incredible career, and you know, sparring partner for Muhammad Ali, and he's an incredible businessman.
Yes, he is. Larry Holmes is another underrated, because it's kind of hard to follow the act of Muhammad Ali.
Well, see, and plus he had a lisp, and people made fun of him, even in the boxing community.
Yes.
And they didn't think he was bright. This guy's worth billions, and he's giving back to the community, kind of like Magic Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
He's bought Inner City. I think it's not Erie, but it's somewhere.
Eastern
PA.
Yeah.
And he's given back, and I respected him for that as well.
No, actually, it's just
Larry. So just 2.5 hours with Larry, his buddy.
Yeah, because
just hanging out.
It was me and referee Bill
Clinton. I'd be hanging out for 2.5 minutes. I'd be happy.
Heck yeah. I mean, he loves to sing. He loves to sing. I had an opportunity to have dinner with him, but I didn't want it to be too, you know, because I'm like, this is Larry Holmes. In my mind, he's the third greatest heavyweight champion of all time. Once again,
great jab.
Yes, oh, brilliant jab. And not only that, his recovering capabilities, because the time that he got dropped by Ernie Shavers, oh my gosh.
The acorn?
Oh, the acorn right hand.
There was a boxer back in the day, Ernie the Acorn Shavers.
Oh.
Just a monster of a man. And when Muhammad boxed, when they were boxing, you know, when you clinch,
yeah,
kept rubbing his head, calling it acorn. I'm rubbing the acorn.
Yeah, but
Muhammad was hilarious.
Yeah, but Ernie Shavers hurt Ali in that fight. He hit Ali so long and hard, Ali's legs were shaking. And there was a knockdown the referee did not call that should have been knocked down.
He called it a slip.
Yeah, he called it a slip. That was a knockdown. And Ali even admitted that Ernie Shavers was the hardest man that he ever punched or that he ever faced. That's saying something, because he fought like Sonny Liston and Cleveland Williams and George Foreman. These devastating punchers.
Ken Norton wasn't too
shabby. Yes. Oh, Ken Norton, he could thump too.
But he had that unique style, that cross-arm. Yes, that
cross-arm, you know, style. And he was trained by the great Eddie Futch as well. And matter of fact, if you look at Ali's losses, 4 out of his 5 losses came from the hands of Trainer Eddie Futch.
Because Eddie Futch
had Larry Holmes.
Norton twice.
He had Norton.
Yeah.
He had Frazier. And I believe he had Spinks too.
Did he have Spinks at that time?
I believe he had Spinks at the time too. So I'm like, for some reason, he could take any fighter and get the best out of him to beat Ali. So, but one thing about Ali, you're not going to beat him twice.
Let me take care of a little business.
No problem.
We'll continue. We got about 5 more minutes, 10 more minutes. I want to thank, of course, my good friend, Ace High Printing, Rick Herbert. He's the official printer of Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection on the T, Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM. Actually having a fundraiser at Sunshine 96.7 FM today, where local music lives. It's they're a public radio, and it's right up the street here on Central. Tune into FM Sunshine 96.7 FM. Everything from folk music to rock to I needed a little R&B, a little jazz. We've got that direction. You name it, all local musicians, 1,200 musicians from both sides of the bay in the area. And so he takes care of all of us. Some of his clients, I mean, this guy isn't just some chump locally. He's doing your cards right now, by the way, my friend. He's very humble. He's been traveling. He's done stuff with Kiss, Madonna. He's done stuff with the Lightning, the PGA. He doesn't even like sports. World Series, Super Bowls. Get a hold of acehighprinting.com. He's been serving Tampa Bay for 18 years, Rick Herbert. And then, of course, one more shout-out to Barbie. That's Barb with Tampa Bay. Give her a call today. And 712-540-3704. That is 712-540-3704. And reach out to her, and she will take care of you. Barb with Tampa Bay at gmail.com. And my new guy, Joe Shaw. We'll be talking a lot about him as well. Give him a call for all your mortgage needs, and you're going to need them. Things are going to get crazy, unfortunately, here in the rest of 2022. Give him a call, 813-947-3705. That's 813-947-3705. Continue our conversation with Christopher Young. He's a boxing aficionado, expert, historian, as I say, from the peewees to the preps to the pros, we like to give positive perspective, and that's what this gentleman's been doing most of his life to the sweet science, which there aren't enough of you, Christopher Young, and I applaud you for carrying the torch from a historical perspective, but you're not just looking back. You're trying to make a difference now the youth. And talk about the climate in Tampa Bay for boxing for young kids. Are they getting involved, or are they all jumping over to UFC?
I think they're getting involved because, and I think MMA have seen the light, so to speak, because...
We shouldn't even use that bad word on this show.
Okay,
I'm kidding.
I respect all forms of combat, but if you look at their top 10 boxers and look at the top 10 MMA guys, who gets paid the most? There's no dispute. This is why you'll start to see more UFC guys going over to boxing, because the pay discrepancy is ridiculous. We take someone like Tyson Fury. Tyson Fury's last fight made $25-30 million. Your UFC world champion didn't even crack $1 million. So why now he's in negotiations, possibly talking to Tyson Fury to do a boxing match?
That's kind of what's going on in golf right now.
Even with the influencers, they come on over to boxing. Why?
What's that kid's name?
Jake Paul.
Yeah, Jake Paul and all that.
Yeah,
What do you think of that deal?
Well, I did.
It's a money grab.
I did two of his fights.
Oh, you did?
I did his last fight when he knocked out Tyron Woodley.
Wow. Talk about that a little bit for our audience, because you're everywhere.
Yes.
See, even a young kid like this who doesn't give a damn about boxing, you're watching Jake Paul.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what I was going to say.
You're 23 years old. You don't know better.
What I see about boxing, it's Jake Paul or it's these school rough and rowdy fights.
Yes.
I see a lot of that.
Make sure I don't go too deep. But first time when he did his pro debut in Miami back in 2020, right on the eve of the Super Bowl. And I got called in to do that fight and the title fight. Well, I was like, what's the big deal with this Jake Paul guy? Okay.
He's like, oh, college wrestler.
So I asked my boss. I said, boss, how do I officiate these guys? He said, Chris, since they want to be professionals, you treat them like such.
Let him get the hell beat out of him.
So I go into the locker room. The camera's there. Shane Mosley was his trainer at the time. And
Shane Mosley trained him? Sugar Shane?
Sugar Shane. He was in the locker room. The camera's there. And I was,
come on, Sugar Shane. He took the money.
No. Listen, I will
get... Edge endorsing boxing, so I'm with you.
Yes. And after the camera went off, Jake comes to me and asks me, hey, ref, listen, my nose bleed easily. So if my nose start bleeding, don't stop the fight. So I looked at him. I said, dude, in the state of Florida, we don't stop fighting for nosebleeds. So y'all going to fight. So we go into the ring, and I've already cramped up. I was dehydrated because I had a long 10-round
fight.
You were? Yes, I was.
Oh, man.
So now they come into the ring, and I'm feeling the energy. Because one of my referees says, hey, Chris, you about to be famous tonight. I'm like, with these guys? You know what I'm saying? Who do you got?
These chumps?
Oh, how wrong was I? How wrong was I? So, Michael Buffer was there. Yeah.
Buffer did the call?
David DeMonte was there.
Oh, my God.
Every the who's who came out that night. We were three tiers stacked. You understand? We had...
This is in Miami.
It was on the Zone, Match Room. Eddie Hearn was on that platform. So I'm doing the co-main event, and we had three world title bouts, and Jake Paul was the co-main event.
What, did he have two under his belt?
Man, he had zero on the belt at the time.
That was his
pro debut. Oh. So I go in there, and they come to center the ring. I do my normal instructions, you know, protect yourself all the time, give my commands all the time, blah, blah, blah. I said, tonight, y'all professionals, y'all going to fight like it. So go to the to neutral corners. I ensure the judges are in place, ready to go. The bell rings. They go on out, and his opponent, Anison Gibb, his stance was way too wide. So I said, okay, I didn't want this fight because I expect to be amateurish. You know,
haymakers.
Yes, so I expect no technique. But then watching Jake had a pretty decent jab.
Because of Sugar Shane.
So I said, okay, all right. So then he hit Anison Gibb, dropped him. But his shot was a good shot, but not to devastate him. I says, okay, so I'm counting. And Anison Gibb went to the corner like he was buzzed. And then Anison Gibb trying to rush him again. And Jake Paul did a nice, what they call, like a counter left hook. Bam. Anison goes down again. So I'm counting him again. I says, dude, one more knockdown, the bout is over. So Anison Gibb trying to do what he had to do. He's trying to fight on the inside. Jake is basically peppering that jab. He went a beautiful right hand. Anison Gibb is hurt. So Jake Paul's throwing the same combination. 1-2, the right hand miss, hit him again. 1-2, bam. His glove hit the canvas. Bout is over. The crowd goes electric. I'm talking about you had the who's who. Bernard Hopkins was there. Shannon Briggs, Clarissa Shields, Devin Haney, what's that actor from CSI, the heavyset brother? He was there. Dude, we had a lot of people there. Once the fight was over, about 67% of the building left. We still had a main event, world title main event.
Nobody gave a damn about that.
I said, what the heck going on here? And he got a nice little paycheck. They just say that. They just say his paycheck was probably equal or more than the champions that got paid that night. So, fast forward 3 years later, I'm in my hometown in Tampa. To me, this, and I found out I got the main event. Now, to me, this is historic for me because we used to call it the Ice Palace back in the day.
Yep.
Okay, back in 1998, we was the first class to graduate from the Ice Palace. So I got a chance to walk across the stage back in 1998.
Amalie Arena?
Yes, sir.
Wow.
So now, then I come back there as a fan, and I got a chance to watch the Roy Jones Jr. and Antonio Tarver 3 fight, and I had front row on floor seats. Great seats. So now I come back again. Now I'm main eventing my own freaking town. And it's on Showtime pay-per-view on a big stage. Now, I've done crowds 30,000,
40,000
before.
Bravo, but that is really cool.
But to be in an arena that close, because you had football people there, you had the boxing people, the MMA people, the influencers.
So who's who?
Yes, everybody was there. And I'm not for lie to you. The fight stunk. Okay. But that knockout was legit. I've been interviewed twice about whether that shot was fixed. That was not fixed. Jake Paul.
I know, just getting to know you now. Yeah. You would not be involved in a fixed fight.
No, ever. And watching how Jake threw that shot, Jake set that fight. He set that punch up. And I said, you have to go back to the previous round when he hurt Tyron Woodley to the body. So he was doing feints. That was a boxing move. So Tyron Woodley tried to emulate the same thing. So Jake Paul kept on feinting to the body. So when he did, he looked like he go to the body, came over to the top. So when Tyron Woodley did, he put his hand down, and then Jake went down and came over to the top. Man, he hit Tyron Woodley so hard, the sweat beads off his head, hit me right dead in my chest. I mean, and when he went down face first. For a split second, I thought about counting, but I'm like, he's done. And waved it off, and the rest is history.
Well, speaking of history, now you're going down in history, and he's going to want you at every one of his bouts.
You know what? It's funny you said that.
But he's going to request you.
No.
Why would you screw with the karma?
Exactly.
Because he told me once, because the fans were going crazy and the media was all there, he told me, hey, Chris, he said, you're my good luck charm. I said, why you say that? He said, every time you do my fights, I win by knockout. And I'm still mic'd up, so I ain't say a word. I'm like, I don't know how I feel about this. I'm putting the mic over my hand over my mic. I don't know how I feel about this. So, and I don't want to be labeled as that. And I'm now more known for of doing his fight. And I've done world champions, former world champions. You know, people like Jarrett Hurd and Chevelle Hallback and Zaya Zanders, all these guys, and I'm more known.
They're not household names because they're not influencers.
So, but one thing I will give Jake Paul credit for, he is trying to change the game. He's putting these other boxers on a platform because the people that he had on his card were former people that used to be with Al Haymon and Floyd Mayweather. And I sat back because some people had some negative comments. I said, if you take Jake Paul from the equation, will this ring be sold out?
No way.
He says, no. I says, now you have different eyes on the sport, giving these guys an opportunity to perform at a higher level to probably gain more fans.
And that's what the sport needed.
And yes,
it for years.
And I cannot hate on this guy because he already had an audience before he came into boxing. He was a guy from the Disney Channel, and then he became an entertainer, a singer, a rapper, how you want to call it, and he was on social media. So he was able to promote himself, and he's actually thinking outside the box. So I give him credit for that. He's not cheating the sport. He's
I never thought about training. It like that. I'm glad you gave him
yes.
that perspective.
He's actually not cheating the sport. I said, I can't hate on the man because he's actually trying to change the way boxing is right now to give it to a higher platform. That's why he's challenging Dana White. Why are you not paying your fighters? That's why these UFC fighters are going to him. I'm like, he's doing something. Because the old way of doing it, we could do things better.
Well, he's doing it, and you're doing things right. I want to have you on more often.
Yes, sir.
Maybe this is just self-serving for me, and people don't like the sweet science, but it's going to come around. And with stories like this, of you sharing, and it puts things in perspective and gives this old man an idea that, you know, they are branding the sport.
Mm-hmm.
You're working your tail off to do so, and I applaud you. Congratulations on your award. Well-deserved, regardless of how humble you are. You respect it. You've got your as they call now, your tentacles, your platform everywhere in the world of boxing, and it's only going to go up. You're a young man, and I'm glad you brought the young lady that I met over at Plant City with you, and I'm looking forward to future conversations, my man, and talking about a show when we launch our sports channel.
Yes, sir. I'm going to leave you with this, give you something to think about, because you are a fan of the golden era of boxing. Now, everybody believes that George Foreman is one of the top 10 greatest heavyweight champions of all time. And he won the world title in the 90s, just like he won the title in the 70s. What if George Foreman did not lose to Muhammad Ali? How long would he have that belt?
Oh, my. He would have been the Tom Brady of boxing.
He would have surpassed Joe Louis, my humble opinion.
Oh, he definitely would have. But I'm so glad that Muhammad beat him. I watched that fight again the other night. I could watch it a million times, and I could watch the Thrill in Manila. We could go on. I could talk.
So next time we'll come aboard. Give me a fighter that you want to discuss, and we can discuss more into it.
Okay, I'll give you a heads up. All right, brother. Thank you very much.
I appreciate the opportunity, sir.
And if you guys stick around, you got a lot to do. Going downstairs, get some grub, and then I'll come down and I'll grab your lunch for you, and then you got a big weekend still ahead of you.
Yes, because I got to go back home and get showered up, get my clothes changed, drive to Tampa, pick my mama up, my kids up, and come back up here to get ready. So I got a
family celebration, well deserved.
Yes,
he's Christopher Young, and I tell you what, we're going to be talking a lot more about the great sweet science boxing because it is alive and well here in Tampa
Bay. Yes,
thanks, my man.
I appreciate it, sir.
Very much.
Thank you much.
Seeing that you got yourself a little education in the world of boxing.
Yeah, I mean, generally the only thing I know about boxing is, you know, like we said, the Jake Paul stuff. And
well, that's good, because your generation needs to know more about the sweet science.
Yeah, it drove me to watch it, and then Barstool does a bunch of stuff with the DAZN people. It was the only reason I watched the Taylor versus Serrano fight, was because I knew that Dave Portnoy and Big Cat from Barstool were going to be doing an alternate call of it. You know, I don't know a lot about boxing. All I know is you know, Rocky Balboa and and Apollo Creed.
You know, that's sad. You're pretty much like a lot of this generation, because you brought up by UFC, and I'm glad he brought up the purse factor.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dana White, he's getting greedy. He's doing a Don King on us, and I hope he keeps doing it, because that'll drive, as Chris said, that's going to drive more people to boxing, and that's our goal as boxing fans. And when I went... Have you ever been to a boxing card?
I've never actually been
to a boxing card. I'm taking you over to Plant City.
I would love to go.
You'll be amazed.
Oh yeah,
it is Mini Vegas in Plant City, Florida, and it looks the facility is superb. When you drive up, I got invited, and when I drove up, it's like worn out old Motel Sixes in a, like a barricade.
Yeah,
and it's White Sands Recovery Facility, and I have a lot of emotional equity in that with my family and my son. And I love everything they're doing. And my good buddy Randy Grimes that we've had on is very involved in it. And I pull up, and I got my car, and I suited up, think I was something. And I didn't know what to anticipate. And all of a sudden, they said, well, we can park your car, sir. And I'm looking around. I'm like, well, okay. And so they parked my humble little car, my little Solera. And all of a sudden, there's two Bentleys pull up. And there's Roy Jones Jr., who I'd met years before, and Antonio Tarver. Roy Jones Jr. looks over. How you been, man? You never met me before. He thought it was somebody. So I rolled with it. I shook his hand, and I walked in with his entourage because they're trying to find my media pass. And I walk in, and here's this big-time event. And ProBox.com, we'll talk about that, but I'm taking you over. Right now, this guy is big-time, and he's kind enough to take some time out to join me. He's Frank Maggio. How are you, my friend? Well, I need to plug you in, first of all. I don't think we're going to have a private conversation.
Yeah.
See, Frank's a brilliant man. He's an IT. He won't be surprised that I didn't have my phone plugged in. Now, can you hear me, my friend?
You sound better now, Mike.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I stumble, fumble, and bumble with this new. But thank you, Christopher Young. I just had a boxing expert on talking about boxing in the great state of Florida, and we remember those days of marketing the big events with the Don King of the world, right?
Don King, yeah, the sweet science, right?
Oh yeah, exactly. It is still alive and well, and I was involved in it for 30 years. But everybody, you know, Don King was deplorable. So let's get caught up on what Frank Maggio is up to, and a couple of things that dawned on me. And I've got a youngster here that's a lot brighter than me. Ben Botham is joining me. He's my new number one draft pick, bright kid. He'll understand some of the things that you're discussing. But, you know, I'm trying to watch the U.S. Open. And I remember you telling me this prediction last year. And they got you going from USA to Peacock, then back to USA, then to NBC. They're all playing football, you know, past the the coverage over to, you know, their stations, and that's not even the end of what the future is going to be like. And you've talked about this. Where do you see broadcast television in the next 10 years? Because it's quickly taking place as I watch YouTube TV and Amazon and all these things.
Well, it all starts with how you're going to define television, right? What's live? What's linear? In time shifting, play shifting, you got the TiVos that change the way and where people and when they watch, and Slingbox. Now you can watch from anywhere. There's so many ways to get content nowadays. So question is, you know, who's going to control what you want to watch now, right? So the way I look at everything is there's the now and there's the then. Sports is the now. Everything else is the then, because you can record it and you can watch it later. And even if it's live now, it goes into the library of the then. So you see what I'm saying? The volume, the sheer volume of then stuff, stuff you can watch whenever you want that's recorded, grows every day. And it's going to be a battle between what's worth watching now. And if you're going to watch it now, the next question is, are you going to have to tolerate commercials? And how many? How many commercials will you tolerate? And that's the constant ebb and flow that's happening right now.
And that's where you come in. Talk about your company React and how you're planning for, you have implemented, and you have a vision on how to capture an audience interactively, as well as get your clients that want to underwrite these television shows or whatever they may be with interactive, so they can track their numbers and they know that their audience is invested in this ad.
Yeah, so it's funny. So you and I met because of Super Squares. You know, we launched Super Squares at Ferg's 3 years ago and did a test, and then it worked. So we grew it, and launched it 2 football seasons ago in Minnesota with, anybody could play, but we focused heavily in Minnesota. And then last year we started testing different advertising models to try to grow the fan base and user base globally or nationally. But all of it was really designed to test this ad technology that we've now perfected. So, I've not said this publicly before, but, Super Square has served its purpose. We have served now 1 million commercials to over 35,000 people over 2 football seasons, have been able to test how this ad technology works, and it's a home run. So the future of advertising, and it's really the future of ad. I'm sorry, Mike. I can hear you.
I'm sorry. I was giving him a quick tip. I didn't know you could hear me. I was listening to 35,000, 1 million ads.
Oh, yeah. So the point is we now know that these ads work better. So the future of ad-supported television, live content, is going to have to include finding a way to make the ads at part of the content experience. The advertising should not be an interruption to what you came to watch. You got to find a way to make the ad part of the experience, and that's what we do through gamification. So what we do is the approach we take is called the total content experience. I know it sounds boring, but if you just imagine if you were hosting, like your show, right? If you're hosting content and you want to have ads as part of it, you got to make them a part of it, not a part from it, right? So what we do is we create a mobile application that rewards you and engages you by asking you predictions and questions about the content and the advertising. And that's the future of ad-supported live content.
I've got to bring this up because I haven't talked to you lately. Joe Boudreaux and I, we're going to launch a Tampa Bay Sports Connection streaming radio sports channel. And we've already got 11 shows that we'll be producing. Some of them will be half hour, some will be hours, but it's going to be local sports and hope to add other people. And then we will evolve into our Hoovy.tv productions of this. And so I would like to sit down with you at a smaller level and maybe we can test the Tampa Bay with some potential advertisers that I'm talking to, unless that's too small a platform.
I don't know that it's too. And advertising for the last 30 years has always gotten attention indirectly or as a byproduct. It's like the necessary evil. And we think if you just take a new approach, like this ad is quite frankly sometimes better produced than the program. How do you make it fun and entertaining? And that's the challenge. So the key is, though, it takes time and work. You got to look at the content. You've got to write questions about it. You got to spend time with people and writers. So typically this technology and technique really works with larger programs, with larger audiences, because it's expensive. But if you have the audience and the advertisers, all of a sudden these ads work. And we're talking exponentially better, like a factor of 10. It's not even close how much better this technology works than a normal ad, because it's something people want to watch. And if they engage with that commercial, they share data willfully because you don't take advantage of them. And all of a sudden, they learn more about the product. They remember who it is. They understand what the product's really all about, and it ends up causing sales. That's what the purpose of an ad is.
I know you keep your finger on the pulse in some capacity. What do you think about this this Saudi-backed golf tournament? Eight events, 200 million here, 150 million there. To sports wash their money, but there is a bit of hypocrisy. As you're well aware, you've played in the big leagues, in the advertising world, and the economics of sport. It's all driven by cash, but this is new ground, higher stakes.
Yeah, tell me this, so maybe you can. I have yet to find out what's the business model of the LIV. How do they make money?
Do they have
broadcast rights with anybody? I mean, well, how do they make
YouTube
money?
YouTube right now. At the LIV is. I don't think they have a business model. I think that they're enamored by Greg Norman, who tried this before, and they throw in enough cash that it's creating a ruckus. And but the PGAs, they don't have a. They got a few skeletons in their closet as well, as everybody does in sports. So we'll see what happens. I wondered if you had seen anything about it.
I think it's adhering to the same model at Facebook and most of these new media platforms. They build the audience. They don't worry about profits. They don't worry about charging anybody anything. They want to build a user base. And then once they get the user base and they get them used to the content, then they start bombarding you with commercials and selling your data. Right? Or charging you. So to me, that's probably the model they're doing. Don't worry about the money. We got enough to, we make oil. We'll make more oil. We'll dig some more oil. We'll drill more.
Exactly. America will buy more oil from them. That's for a different conversation. Hey, I hate to wind this up. I let this gentleman talk boxing for a long time because he's getting an award today. But I want to buy you a lunch, Joe and I, buy you a lunch one of these days at Sweet Sage, and we'll get caught up. And then as football season gets closer, we'll talk more about what you're doing. How's that sound?
Absolutely. Sounds great. Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Frank, for taking time out. That's Frank Maggio. And I'll tell you what, young man, that guy, you want to talk visionary. And he was a Procter & Gamble marketing genius, and now he's on his own. So let's get some baseball in as we get ready to wind the show down. And he's Ben Botham. Of course, the Botham Line in Baseball is going to be his show. We're going to be launching that sometime this summer. So let's talk. It's all you. You want to go?
We'll start off with the Rays a little bit. I mean, the Rays do play later today against the Orioles. Unfortunately, we did drop a game yesterday against them. And like I was saying earlier, unfortunately, the Rays have been losing games by no more than two runs for the past four games, I think it was. We start off with the Yankees and then into the Orioles, and we just don't have the run support. We do have the injuries. Wander Franco, he's still injured, of course. Brandon Lau are low with his back. It's kind of tough to be able to participate and compete against these teams.
What about our arms? Look at our arms and our best arm. Are we even going to get him back this year is the question.
I don't think we're going to get him back, to be honest with you, and I don't think the Rays should really try to rush him at this point. I'd much rather have him healthy for next season than have a labored injuring kind of guy out there on the mound. But with our hitting just needs to improve. We are in the MLB. We have the 26th worst batting average out of all the teams. Baltimore Orioles are ahead of us in batting average.
That's sad.
It's very disappointing. I mean, we only have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hitters above 200. We have Mike Zunino batting 148, Taylor Walls 149. Brujan 158, Brett Phillips 162, and the list goes on of guys who are just unable to hit above the Mendoza line, and our pitchers need the support. We need guys that are going to be able to help us get to 90 games, to 100 games to the season, because if we don't, it just isn't going to happen.
You continue this baseball coverage and I'll be right back.
All right, sounds good. But we'll be facing Nestor Cortez this coming up this week against the Yankees, and he's been a dominant force right now for the Yankees, leading kind of their pitching revival. And his little he's really kind of improved his pitching a lot recently, and he will be a force to be reckoned with. But let's move on to the All-Star game that happened here in Tropicana Field. Where it was Hillsborough County versus Pinellas County. It was a great event with lots of kids coming out from all the local high schools. We had one kid coming out from Seminole High School, my alma mater. But it was a great game, a great experience. Lots of kids came out, and everyone had a great time. Unfortunately, Pinellas County did lose the game to Hillsborough County, 7-2. They led it off with a triple in the first inning off of Ethan Phillips of Calvary Christian. And it was a great experience. The Rays really put on a great event for the kids to all participate in, and everyone come out and have a grand time. So now we'll move on to the NCAA Men's Baseball World Series. We recently had Notre Dame, who defeated Texas, which was, it made Mike very happy. Mike's a big Notre Dame fan. The Notre Dame will be playing the Oklahoma Sooners coming up, and I believe Notre Dame will do very well against them. Oklahoma's lineup is putting up 7.8 runs per contest and 8.6 in the playoffs, and Notre Dame is surrendering 4.5 runs per game. Notre Dame, though, is putting up 6.7 runs per contest, with Oklahoma allowing 6.2 runs per game. So I have no doubt that Notre Dame will do very well against Oklahoma in the coming games. Mike, what do you think about that?
Well, first of all, I love it.
Yeah.
Go Irish. I'm a macro snapper. I'm a diehard Notre Dame fan, brother. You know that. We got about 3 minutes. So you wrap that up. I want to ask you a question.
Yep.
You went to the All-Star game.
I did. I went to the All-Star game. It was a
Pinellas
great
Pinellas County?
Pinellas County versus Hillsborough County.
Cool. Did you see, was there any kids from Boca Ciega there? They had a catcher, I think.
They might have kind of wiggled him in there. It was a great event. Lots of family out there taking photos. It's a great experience for the kids. I remember when I got to do it, it was...
Oh, you were in it?
Yeah, I was in it back in 2016, and it was just a blast being able to go out there. And, you know, you really feel like you're a big leaguer.
Well, and the kids getting the recognition, and a good majority of them are actually going on to play college ball. Am I right?
Oh, yeah. You get to see a lot of guys that are, you know, you're going to play against in whether it's Division I, Division II, Junior College, NAIA in the future. And it's kind of cool because you face guys that you never really got a chance to really communicate with, and you face them on the ball field throughout the season. I remember when we were playing against Clearwater when during our senior night in Seminole, I set the record in Pinellas County for number of hit batters. They kind of knew that I was a submarine pitcher, so I kind of worked the
anybody ever charge a mound on you?
I was more ready to charge the umpire and the other team because these guys were standing literally directly over the plate. Their feet were past the white on the box, and I know the rules of baseball. If you're literally over the plate and you get hit by it, that's not on me. That's not a hit by pitch.
The great Bob Gibson, you might have been going to the hospital.
Yeah,
anybody crowd the plate
a little harder.
Bob Gibson, yeah, and I had conversations
and so,
with him twice.
And so I got to see them in the All-Star game later on, and they told me, yeah, you know, I told my players to, you know, crowd the plate, stand over the plate a lot, and I'm like, well, thanks, guy. Now that you're coaching me, I gave you a shutout inning, up, three down, and now you're telling your guys to. So, it's a cool experience for everybody all around.
Well, that was another very broad variety show. We'll get more high school and baseball next week. I'll load it up for you. I'll have you start picking topics for the bottom line in baseball. But, yeah, a lot of diversity today. Just say that.
Oh, yeah. Well, we didn't really talk much about our horse picks from last week in the Belmont. Barber Road, and I think you picked, what was it, Rich Strike?
Yeah.
Came in sixth and seventh.
I know. He was right. Our man was right. All right. For Mark Ferguson, Barry Smith, thanks for bringing that up. Pete Young, Chris Young, Frank Maggio, Ben Botham, Joe Boudreau, and Big Ed on the controls. I'm Mike Rickard. Thanks for listening to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection. Wishing you and your families a fabulous weekend. Happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there. God bless you. God bless America. And be sure to have a championship week.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.